Hi, it's Lacey Philippich here from Money School, and I'm here today talking with David Levin, author of Raise Your Inner Game. And the topic we're talking today about is how mental habits and small, consistent practices can make a big difference to your finances. And I can personally relate to this. It often feels overwhelming when you have to make a change. The stress of thinking about all the little things you've got to do accumulates, and it goes in the too hard basket. And although finances are something that I find really easy, obviously, there are other areas in my life that I struggle with, things like exercise and eating well and being a workaholic, which impacts on my family as well as me. So I do want to work on them. And I love the theory of mindfulness and meditation. I had done a gratitude journal and those kinds of things, but I could not get the hang of turning my brain off. And then I read David's book and everything changed. And particularly for me, the no quiet practice was revolutionary. And I also love the daily habits because I do strongly believe that you get what you measure. And that's certainly something talked about in David's book. And I realized that this book could have a massive impact on people with money mindset problems. And I'm thrilled that David could join us today to discuss how this might work in specific cases. So before I hand over to David, I'll give you a brief introduction about him. So in 1992, David Levin was a struggling singer-songwriter whose career and life were going nowhere. But then he had a strange and illuminating experience, and it totally changed the arc of his life. 4 albums, 5 books, and 29 years of happy marriage later, he's condensed what he learned into a simple, practical guide for how to be stronger mentally and emotionally so that you can do your best work and live a life that you're proud of every day. Now, David is also the co-author with John G. Miller of the million-selling book QBQ, The Question Behind the Question. He's the author of Don't Just Talk, Be Heard, and the creator of the Focused Everyday Training Program. He is also an award-winning songwriter and recording artist and lives happily ever after in Viroqua, Wisconsin with his wife and their 2 children. Hi, David.
Hi, Lacey.
Thanks so much for joining us. I am thrilled you could be here, and I'm so excited about the release of your book. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but today what I wanted to share with the listeners of Money School and, of course, your followers as well, is how the practices that you have outlined in your book can really help people with money problems.
Well,
you go.
No. give me a specific sort of example of a money problem.
Okay.
Maybe that you've had or that a client has, you know, shared with you.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I have got hundreds. So I think probably the area which jumps out to me most with people for this stuff about the mindset thing is debt. I talk to people who get themselves mired in credit card debt every day. And a lot of it arises from these bad habits that we build. And it's not a habit that's like a big decision that you make, I'm just going to have this bad habit. It's these little tiny things that accumulate. And over time, people find themselves repeating that behavior, often subconsciously, not realizing that they're doing it. And I guess I've got quite a few friends, and one in particular who has talked to me a lot about her debt issues and her habit of just pulling out her credit card on impulse, particularly online. You know, you've got a Facebook ad pops up in front of you and you go, I just have to have those shoes. Mm-hmm. and they decide to buy and they don't think about it. And then later they regret it, especially when the credit card bill comes in. And look, I could literally cite over 100 people that I've spoken to personally that have had this problem, and I'm sure there are thousands of them out there. And I guess I'm interested in how the practices you've outlined in your book could help people overcome habits like that, this compulsive spending, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's such a great example. You know, there's really 2 pieces to getting a handle on behaviors like that. And, you know, we're talking about sort of spending and impulsive spending behaviors, but it applies to any kind of unconscious behavior. The first part grows out of, you know, the fact that we refer to them as unconscious behaviors. We're not aware of them. They have this power over us, but we're not really, well, like I say, they're unconscious. We're not aware of them. So the first part is to just become aware of them. The first part of my book is really about helping people have a new way of sort of seeing and understanding these inner processes, what's actually happening in there. So they do start to see them coming and recognize them and have just a sort of a practical, functional sense of what's happening in their inner life. So that's step one. And then once you start to see them, and by the way, just seeing them gets you a long way to being able to control them. But so, I mean, that really, it's a big, big, big first step. But you can also go further than that. So then once you really become aware of what's happening in there. Then it's nice to have some specific skills and tools to help you counter that and take control back of those moments. You mentioned no quiet a minute ago. We'll get into that soon, I'm sure. And then the third piece, which actually also applies to any sort of behavioral change, is having some sort of system to build a new habit. You know, a lot of times the problem with changing behavior is not understanding what needs to be done or even doing it itself, because the actual work in the moment is surprisingly easy. The hard part becomes just remembering and not slipping back into your old ways. So just any some sort of a system. And the near the end of the book, the fourth tool is a real practical system to just help people track and record their behavior and stay engaged with it over time. And that really ends up being the biggest factor in anchoring new change. You've got to, for again, so just to summarize that, first you've got to become aware of what's happening. Then you need some specific, you know, tools or techniques to turn it around. And then you need to practice those long enough for them to become a new normal.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, to share this example of my friend Nikki, and I guess she's kind of been through that experience where she said to me the other day, she has seen a pair of shoes come up on her feed, which she really wanted, and she actually stopped herself from buying them. Whereas about a year ago, she probably would have just clicked buy and not thought about it till the credit card bill came in. But she was so proud of herself because she actually caught herself doing exactly those steps that you just said. She recognized the behavior. She decided she wanted to change the behavior and put the tools in place to do it. And then she tracks herself and she rewards herself as well when she does the right thing by her new standard that she wants to follow. So I totally can see how this works for people, particularly with debt and that impulsive spending. So that is awesome. Thank you, David. I really appreciate that insight into that. And I guess that's another thing that I guess that I'm interested in particularly is that dopamine hit that people get. Because, and I think you've shared an example in your book about, you know, wanting to order water but ordering a Coke, right? That's a great example. And that really resonated with me, this idea that you're sitting in the restaurant and you're going, what should I have? I should have the healthy thing. But when then someone comes to take your order, you actually choose the thing that you impulsively wanted anyway, because that's just what your brain's trying to do to you. And I certainly see a lot of that with that dopamine hit. And talking to people about, you know, budgeting and planning is something that I can do for hours on end. But if they can't overcome that, it's a real struggle for them. They don't tend to get ahead. So if you're combating that dopamine hit, trying to get people to get a new hit, a new satisfaction from not spending, how would you recommend they apply your tools to do that?
Couple things come to mind. One is to just say, go easy on yourself. Understand it's going to take a while to, you know, to undo that, to create new habits. And don't, you know, you're going to slip. One of the things I say a lot with this material is that, because there's sort of this promise in there that you're going to be working at your highest level now. You're going to be just fully embodying all of your potential, you know? You're going to be mastering your inner game. And you can hear that a little unrealistically. It doesn't mean you're not going to have rough days or rough periods, or you're going to be weak. For example, me, I mean, you mentioned the Coke thing. Coke Zero is I don't want to officially call it an addiction because that has other implications, but it feels like that to me. It's something that I want every day, and I want it several times every day, and and it doesn't, that doesn't stop. If I could, I could take a break. I could take a 30-day challenge, which is by the way something I recommend people try, but we can get to that. I could take a 30-day challenge and be off Coke for 30 days. So you'd think I'm in a new habit, you know, I'm over it. It comes back just like it always was. So anyway, there'll be periods. There'll be times when, for some combination of reasons, I'm just not, I don't feel quite as strong and sharp, or I'm not feeling healthy, or I'm having trouble sleeping. And all those things chip away at your ability to stay focused and keep your willpower strong. And there'll be periods where I'm drinking Coke again. So the thing that I don't do is say, oh gosh, I guess all that stuff was a lie. I guess I'm really, you know, I really am just weak, and forget about it. I'm tracking, and we haven't talked about this, but I actually have a little spreadsheet that I track a handful of things. I call it the inner game tracker in the book. And I have a column for each item I am trying to manage. Some of them are things I'm trying to do less of, like drinking the Coke. Some of them are things I'm trying to do more of, like putting a good new habit into place, like going for a walk or a run. So I've got this, it runs back for years. And every day I am good about not having the Coke, I fill in the little cell. And the days that I'm not good, I leave it blank. And over time, you just, it's not that big a deal. It does matter to you. You do want to avoid it for all the reasons. You know, it's not like you've changed your mind on it. But you also understand that it's going to ebb and flow, and that's just the way it is. So, so that part of that is just, you know, go easy on yourself. Another part is, this is interesting, but depending on what the behavior is, again, think about my Coke again, but maybe that might not even be the best because I actually can control that pretty well. If somebody is, you know, spending can be a pretty complex emotional issue. It can have a lot of power over someone. So what I'm trying to get at is, and this is one of the things I like a lot about the program in the book, is that you can start to build up that strength by practicing with smaller things. If you can find some things that you do sort of impulsively, sort of habitually, but they're not a big deal, then I would say start tracking that one. And just being really good and focused with that. So again, it's the awareness and it's the practice of resisting the impulse. And what you can build a habit around that. And then it's like lifting a little weight. You start small, you build up to bigger ones because the mechanism is the same, even though it's some of these things are big, complex issues. The actual mechanism in the moment is still the same. The choice came up to you. You had this kind of split brain. You had, you know, what you wanted to do. You've got these strong impulses to do the other thing. And you just choose. The mechanism is always exactly that and no more than that. It's just some things are harder. So you can practice that mechanism with all sorts of little things. And you'll be really surprised how much power that gets over time.
That is such a good point. And it immediately made me think of an example then of my friend who I'm big on negotiating, right? It's one of the things I talk a lot about, and particularly people negotiating things like the interest rates on their home loans. And you know how that gets beaten out of you, right? We get told not to ask. You know, it sort of becomes a bit of a cultural thing. It's fine when you're, you know, traveling in Asia and you're at a market, you're expected to barter, but not so much in the States in Australia. And I have a friend who I've been talking to for a long time about her interest rate on her home loan, which has been 5.1%. which is over a percent higher than most people are paying right now. And she was freaked out at the idea of going and asking her bank manager for a deal. And I said to her, well, one of the things that I do to keep my negotiating skills honed is when I go and buy vacuum cleaner bags, because I'm old-fashioned, I've got a vacuum with bags in it, not the old Dysons or whatever they've got now without the bags, I always negotiate $4 off it. So I go into the electrical store and they say it's $25 and I say, can you do better? And they always knock $4 off for me.
Nice.
And everybody else comes in and buys it at a higher price. You know, I see them come in and buy the bags and I go, you guys are crazy. You know, like you took 20 seconds for me to ask the question. And so I encouraged her to start doing little things like that. Go and start, just find small things that are very low impact if someone says no, so that she could build that confidence. And so she did that for a few months. And then lo and behold, she went the other day to the bank and asked for a reduction and got herself down a whole percent from 5.1 to 4.1%, with it, which is worth over $1,000 a year for her in repayments. So it's a great example that after hearing you talking about that, you know, build your muscles up there, you know, build yourself up, just came to mind as a really good example of someone doing that in finance with something they found really scary but wanted to be able to do. So they just did little tiny bits and then got to their end goal of negotiating their interest rate. And now she'll do it every year, I hope.
That's fantastic. There's one more thing I want to say about this. I think what you just said, as far as, you know, a smaller version of the same fear and going to the big one, I think that's excellent. But one of the things about this material, and this probably will bring us to this no quiet idea. You mentioned that in the introduction. Just so people know, no quiet, it's actually like in quotes, two words, no quiet. And it's that you actually will say this sort of out loud or in your head. And the idea is when you hear this voice in your head that is, you know, sometimes it's just talking you down. Sometimes it's trying to talk you into doing something maybe you don't want to do. Whatever it is, it's pulling you off track. You sort of pretend that it's actually another person inside there. And so no quiet just means you turn to them and say, no, quiet. You just shut down the conversation. That's a really interesting approach in the context of what we're just talking about, because normally it gives you a whole new kind of power over it. Normally, let's say you're in that moment, the shoe ad comes up and you want to buy it. And what sort of happens in your head is you get into a debate. The part of your brain that's telling you you should buy it has a bunch of arguments why you should buy it. And you're making arguments why you shouldn't buy it. And it's sort of an intellectual, rational debate. I mean, it's happening in an instant, but that's what's going on. And you can see another example of this when you think about all the times your voice in your head is, you know, talking you down, telling you you're an idiot or you're weak or you can't do it or who do you think you are, right? All of our brains say this stuff to us all the time. So when it happens, again, the natural reaction is to have the debate. Well, gosh, you know, I know, or maybe it's not that bad, or you come up with some other counter argument. But this no quiet idea gives you another option, because rather than even engaging with that debate, you can just say, stop. Just stop. You can just shut it down almost instantly. And so I guess the point of that is sometimes when people have something they're struggling with over time, it just has this weight to it, and they almost can't even get their head around the idea of dealing with it again. They're so tired of having that struggle and having that debate. But once you sort of get this idea that you can embody this other voice, and imagine, for example, you're sitting at your desk and you're trying to do some work, and the person next to you says, hey, let's think about this now instead. And you say, you know, if somebody was there, you'd say, shut up, right? Stop bugging me.
I totally agree.
Rather than, no, I don't need to do that right now. I got to do this. Rather than arguing, you just say, please stop. And you can do that with these, with all kinds of impulses and desires and drives. And it is just so much more satisfying and surprisingly effective and liberating to just say, shut it down. One of the people from my book, I didn't tell this particular story in the book. Her name's Bridget. She told a story. She was a nurse, and she, no quiet was a big thing for her too. So she told this little story about just at work, just walking along from one meeting to the next, and, you know, fine, kind of present, happy state. And all of a sudden, this thing came into her head, which was this ongoing situation with a coworker that was kind of negative. They'd had a recent meeting that had gone really bad. And so she realized, again, I remember earlier I said that the first step is awareness. So she noticed all the stuff that was going on in her head. She was seeing all the images again. She was back in that meeting. She was hearing the harsh words and just seeing the looks on the face. And she's just really sort of overcome with this negative experience. It had kind of taken over her state again. And she said, normally, I would have just the way it would have been. I would have just been in that negative state until something else happened later. But because she had worked on this two-piece thing of the awareness and the no quiet, she saw that come up and she just said, uh-uh, not going there. And that was it. Just boom. She was back to her happy state and went off on her way. And the last thing about that is you mentioned earlier you were talking about Nikki. One of the biggest things you said with Nikki was she was so proud of herself.
Yeah,
for having resisted that. You know, we talk about the obvious benefits of getting some control over our impulses, especially around spending. But again, any impulse. And, you know, the obvious benefits are you don't get so much in debt and you don't have all this junky stuff. But the one that really changes people's lives is that they start to feel proud of themselves again. Pretty much everything that we feel shame about, that makes us look at ourselves and just not be proud of the person we are, has to do with impulse control. and emotional self-regulation and being able to manage our thoughts and our attention, not get so distracted. So as you start to do some of these things and gain some control, even over the littlest things, I mean, that shoe thing, that was a big win. But the kind of surprising thing people discover is even with the little ones, you also start to feel proud of yourself because you're living more intentionally rather than being sort of just pulled around by your unconscious impulses. And it's really pretty transformational. But I want to ask you, you mentioned earlier that no quiet was a big thing for you. So have you had some of those experiences as far as your own self-esteem and your own sort of the emotional payoff from this?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I guess I've mentioned like money is the area that I feel like I'm quite in control of. I do still suffer from impulse spending desires like everybody does. And I do, you know, I guess I'm similar to you where I did the tracking for a while about I didn't click buy on that ad that came up on Facebook the other day, that kind of thing. But yeah, the no quiet thing for my personal experience, I am a typical busy-minded woman with two kids, you know, you're just always thinking about everything. And thinking about everybody else as well, you know, what's going on over here and little worries. And I do feel like my mind can go on about 12 tracks at once, and it affects my productivity. It affects my ability to be present with my children. It affects my sleep is probably the biggest thing. And my kids are quite young, 4 and 2. So sleep is like, it's the new sex, we say,
it's
over
huge.
Here. You know,
yeah. It's huge.
It's a big deal. Yeah. And I notice about myself and I exactly the feelings you described. I feel bad about the fact that I can't overcome these urges or that I can't get a grip on my head. That's how it feels. Mm-hmm. And then I tried meditation and I sucked at it. So I beat myself up about that. I can't even do meditation. Oh my God, what's wrong with me? And then I read your book with the no quiet, and I'm very good at being bossy, it turns out, to my own brain. And so I started trying it particularly at night when I was going to sleep. So not when I'm deliberately meditating, but like I'm the sort of person who I can be dog tired, but something occurs in my brain and then I'm up till 3 a.m. worrying, you know?
Yep.
And I was able to shut that down by using no quiet, just saying to myself, this is ridiculous. Because I'd be doing the same thing you talked about, replaying, you know, you mentioned your friend then. I'd be replaying like issues that I'd had with a family member or a friend from years ago, replaying a conversation that I wish I'd, you know, conducted differently, thinking about what I had to do tomorrow, you know, worrying about my daughter's eating, you know, is she getting enough vegetables? All those wonderful things that run through your mind.
Yeah.
And no quiet would stop me and I would be able to get to sleep. And that is huge, absolutely huge for me, because I it's not insomnia, but I do occasionally find I can't sleep at, you know, like maybe once a month I won't sleep the whole night.
Wow.
And I haven't had that since I've used that practice. So that is massive. I also had given up yoga because I like, you know, yoga is supposed to be this practice of, you know, actually clearing your mind. And I just I'd be doing exercises, but my brain would still be buzzing. It just didn't work for me.
Yeah.
And so I got really disheartened with doing yoga. And you'll laugh at this, David, but I just started yoga again last week.
Wow.
Because I re-skimmed your book after you sent me the new copy. And I was like, oh, you idiot, you've just forgotten this no quiet thing. And I've been to yoga twice in the last few days, and no quiet has worked every time. It's been wonderful.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's really good. It's and that's why I guess I sort of felt it for myself in the areas of my life that I struggle with, you know, that, you know, this ability to turn my brain off and doing regular exercise and being able to go to like let go of stuff to go to sleep. And that's a massive thing for me. Mm. And when I had that experience for me personally, I was like, this is when I talk to people about their spending and their debt, I can understand the theory, but I don't personally relate to it because it's not a problem I have, but it's exactly the same feeling I imagine for them. The people that I've spoken to, every one of them that I've spoken to about going bankrupt. So I've got a family member and a couple of close friends who have gone bankrupt. They all describe those feelings of shame. How did I let myself get here? Mm. Beating up on themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly how I feel about my personal stuff.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think this has just got huge potential for people that have issues around money, issues that maybe they haven't spoken about or they don't even realize they're saying to themselves. But every single person I meet who is in debt and beyond their control feels ashamed of themselves.
Yeah.
And feels like they are unempowered. They feel like they can't do anything about it, that it's just a habit that has taken them over, like alcoholism or something like that. And this, I think, is enough to help them flip that switch over. and not beat themselves up. I love the point that you made before about going easy on yourself, being compassionate. It's okay. You're going to have those impulses. It doesn't matter if you have a day when you drink Coke Zero, you know, or it doesn't matter if you have a day when you do that one impulse buy. Just don't do it every day.
Yeah. You know, it's so true. Gosh, that was powerful stuff. I want to say one little thing there. When you know, so somebody's gone bankrupt. They've made some bad choices. They're feeling bad about themselves. On the one hand, it is rational to feel bad about yourself, right? I mean, you've made bad choices. You've gotten yourself into a bad situation. So it's not completely unjustified to have those thoughts, or to need to, you know, to have me suggest or anybody suggest, you know, you really probably should, you know, lean into that and own up to that and work on those. But here's the thing. So I guess what I'm getting at is sometimes when people hear me talk about no kawaii, just shut down your thoughts, right? Just don't go there. It can sort of sound like you're saying avoid, you know, real problems, avoid dealing with issues. And I'm not saying that at all. Here's the difference. Now, first of all, to be clear, most of the stuff that pops up into our head does not really deserve our attention. It's just random noise. It's negative almost always. It's not really helpful. But sometimes there are things. There's a real issue. Whether it's a personal issue like that or something at work or whatever, you know, it needs to be addressed. The point is, it doesn't do you or anybody any good to be thinking about it all day long when you've got other things to do. And so this comes back to the no quiet. And by the way, no quiet is actually kind of another term for a psychological term called cognitive control, which is just being able to direct your attention intentionally rather than having it just flit around where it wants to go. So if you've got an issue like a spending problem or a bankruptcy that you've got to deal with, or the feelings that come from that, you know, there's some psychological stuff to deal with, you definitely should own up to it and deal with it however that's appropriate. But you pick when you do it. So, for example, I will say, if I've got something that's really bugging me, you know, you mentioned earlier when you're trying to go to sleep, you're upset about a conversation you had or a conflict you had with somebody. My normal instinct is to think about that all day long, right? That will just haunt me and keep me from being present and just just weigh me down all day long. So what I'll do instead is I will say, okay, no, I'll go look to my calendar, and I do put everything I do on my calendar, but I'll just I'll just carve out a time later in the day. Look, we're going to sit down and think about this tonight at 8 o'clock, and I'll write it on my calendar. So then all day long, when my brain keeps wanting me to do it right now, I can say, nope, not now. Yes, I agree it's important. We're definitely dealing with it, but it's on the calendar. It's later. And it gives you one more sort of leverage against that voice to stay. Again, the point is not that any given thought or behavior is necessarily bad. It might be, but not necessarily. It's that you should be in charge of what you think and say and do from one moment to the next. You get to be the grown-up and decide and live intentionally rather than being dragged around by all these physical and emotional and mental distractions, basically.
Absolutely. No, it makes total sense. And I think that that sense of control that you get, it goes to every area of your life, that feeling of, oh, yes, I can control this little bit. Okay, that means that I am in control of my destiny, and you just feel more empowered. It has such a big flow-on effect for people. So,
right, I want to ask you about that too. It wasn't difficult for you to do it, was it?
No, well, this is the thing. It is something that I have to say to myself several times sometimes. So I'll say no quiet, I'll get a couple of minutes of peace, and then it'll come back again. So it is something and I think you mentioned that as well in the book, you know, that it's not always easy. It's not always like you just say no quiet and that's it. It's a magic switch. It is something you have to work at, right? So I do find like I'll be lying in bed, drifting off, something else come in, you know, and I'll sort of come to awareness and then catch myself and go, no, quiet, we agreed. Shush.
Right.
And it's certainly for me, that's how it's been. So though I have found just coming back to the awareness of that practice, doing that in yoga in the last couple of days, it's worked so much more effectively. It's like, you know, people talk about riding a bike. And it just coming instinctively to you once you've learned it. I find it easier now that it's gotten easier over the last several months. So it's had a big impact on me, David, like a massive impact on so many areas of my life. And it does affect how I feel about myself as well. And I feel like I'm being able to be, particularly for me, the biggest thing, like it's really nice to have my personal life sorted and exercise and eating better and all that sort of thing. But it's about my kids. That's the biggest thing for me. I feel like I can be a better parent. Because I'm able to control my attention. And I think you gave an example about someone using their phone to me recently. You know, like he said he didn't want to be on his phone when he was around his kids or whatever, and then he just caught himself using his phone and going, "Oh my God, what am I doing?" You know, that kind of stuff's a big thing for me because I'm similar, you know, like I get the dopamine hit from the phone. So, yeah, I'm certainly now thinking about now that I'm feeling like I've got that control back again, what can I do? What else am I not happy about that I could potentially work on? So I'll be making my own spreadsheet. I've got one that I had a year ago, but now I'll make another one, change a few columns, and start tracking as well.
I will say I didn't want to get into the lecture mode, but the tracking sheet is really the secret weapon. You know, like you mentioned, if I understood you right, that when you went back to yoga, you looked at the book again, you kind of were reminded of it, right? You'd kind of forgotten about it. That's really how gravity really works. I use the word gravity in the book as a shorthand for all of this, all of these internal things that are always pulling us off track. That's maybe its be biggest trick is just momentum and inertia. And the best habit you or anybody could get in place is checking in on that tracker. And I really don't mean you have to check your things off every day. I mean, again, if you looked at my tracker over time, there's more empty than filled in. The point is not to try and be perfectly rigid with what you want to do, your schedule for what you're going to do. It's just to keep the whole thing in your mind. And the tracker is what does that. So you're speaking about the dopamine hit and how you reprogram yourself. The longer you use that tracking sheet, you also get a dopamine hit for filling in those little cells.
Good point,
Right?
yes.
Every time you do that, you go, "Oh, that was good. I did that." And the more you do that, so now you're trading off. And over time, you start to miss, not just like, I mean, you start to tangibly miss being on track. And now you're in good shape because now your momentum is pulling you back to doing all these things. So I would
That's a really
encourage
good
you to do
point.
that. But the other thing I wanted to get was, and I think you were saying this, was basically sometimes when I talk about this and I say words like cognitive control, it sounds like it's sort of a high bar, but it's anybody can do this, right? Don't you think?
Oh, totally. And you know, it's funny. I see it in my 4-year-old now, you know, where something will pop up into her head that happened earlier in the day. You know, she'll cry at night as we're going to bed because of some argument she's had. You know, and I can totally see that, you know, like I'll be able to talk to her about what you've just said about the scheduling time. Like, oh, I can see you're worried about that. Well, let's make a time each day to talk about the things you're worried about,
Oh,
you know, and we'll
beautiful.
just make that our time. That can be our time. So that has just occurred to me, having heard you talk about that. So yeah, I can imagine it even working for her. And I guess, like you said, I'm the sort of person that loves lists, and so many people I know like lists. Maybe it's the people I'm friends with that ticking off. Yeah, anyone could do that, and it can be any habit you want. You know, it doesn't have to be a big thing. It could be I made my bed every day. You know,
Honestly,
something like that.
at first, the smaller the better. I think there's another thing we haven't talked about. We don't need to get into it, but it's the lifts, that little exercise also, and
Oh, yes.
those need to be tiny, unimportant things, exactly like making the bed. But again, that's what you're doing. Again, because it's all the same mechanism. Once you see that, you intentionally go after the smallest things you can think of, because all the benefits are the same. You get all that confidence, all that sense of self-awareness and self-control and pride, and you're building up the skills for the big things later. So I always recommend going for small stuff first.
That makes absolute sense. That is just fantastic, David. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk through this. I think there's a massive potential for anybody who feels like they've got habits related to money or behaviors related to money, or even just that mental talk related to money, that they could apply this. I mean, they could apply it to any area of their life, but this really resonates with the people that I see that struggle with compulsive spending and debt and feeling like they can't manage their stuff. It's just, it's going to be so powerful for people, David. I love the book. I think you've done a brilliant job. Thank you so much for sharing it with the world.
Oh, thank you for saying that. That's lovely.
Oh, that's awesome. So, and I would love people to be able to find your book. So we will make sure that there's a link. How are you selling your book at the moment?
It comes out on September 12th, which I'm thinking maybe will have passed by the time people hear this. Currently it's available on Amazon, and I'm not totally sure. We talked about that offline, but I can't say for sure the hardcover is available in Australia, but hopefully it will be. It's also available Kindle and iBooks. And also for those audiobook lovers out there, it's on audible.com.
Excellent. So raise your inner game, guys. I highly recommend it. We'll include links at the bottom of this blog when we post this so that you can find it. If you feel like you would need some help to build some smaller habits that will then become bigger habits and improve your ability to control your money and also to direct your thinking, as David has spoken back today, I highly recommend this book. It's fabulous. It has changed my life, and I'm sure it will change yours too. So thank you so much, David. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.